Hi there, and welcome to our Inside AWAI session, all about the one project I think I love more than any other, honestly, white papers. It's the $1,000 per page writing project, as you'll discover, and I'm so happy to be here today. My name is Pam Foster. I'm the AWAI Learning Chief, and I've been working with this lady here, Lisa Christoffel, on white papers for a while now. And hi, Lisa.
Hey, Pam.
Lisa is also, she's the managing editor of B2B Writers International, our AWAI website community and forum all about B2B, which is mainly what white papers are for, the business-to-business world, and we'll explain that. But Lisa also writes white papers. She writes a lot of other B2B content, and she knows what she's talking about. So I thought she'd be the perfect person to join me and talk about this really fun opportunity that pays very well. So
I am excited to join you because I also love white papers.
Yeah, we were saying before the recording started that, you know, bacon is my favorite thing on the planet, and then white papers, right after bacon. So yeah, this is a good one. Okay. Now, our goals for today for you are to explain what white papers are, why clients need them, like what the heck are they and why are they so important and why do they pay so well? And basically, some secrets to writing effective white papers. A lot of copywriters don't know these secrets, but you soon will. And then how to get started right now. You've just heard about a great opportunity and we're going to show you how to dive in. So without further ado, drum roll, white papers explained. Now, you might be wondering what these things are, and they might sound like a boring, you know, who uses that? Who reads that? Why is that exciting? Well, basically, businesses love them because it helps them promote a better way to solve a nagging business problem. So let's say, I love to throw out different analogies here, but let's say you run a restaurant and you're getting very tired of all the delivery services taking your profits away when you could be doing delivery yourself. There might be a better solution for that so you can keep those profits. That's what a white paper can lay out for you, that solution. It presents a compelling, unique argument about the solution and why it is the best. There might be things people have tried before that don't work. You can lay that out in the white paper and then explain why the particular solution your client is talking about is the best one. You're not really selling the client's product, though, in most cases. You're just talking about this great solution that the target audience may not be aware of. So it uses data, facts, logic, case studies, quotes, recent surveys, all kinds of things to back up that argument. It guides interested prospects to the next step. And we're going to talk about that. And Lisa, jump in whenever you want. But basically, in a white paper, you're just gently suggesting that if you do like this solution and you want to explore it further, click here and you'll go to either a demo or a free trial or a webinar or a call to a personal discussion about what you need. So the white paper doesn't have to do any hard selling whatsoever. You're just guiding the person to, they're interested, they're excited, and they're like, how do I find out more? Here's the next step for you. So that's what we do. And so again, it's not a sales pitch. It's not a sales letter. It's not a sales piece in any way. There is just a nice call to action at the end. Intrigued? Let's explore more. And that's pretty much how that works. All right. So the fun thing about white papers is that almost any industry that sells something to help businesses thrive will have at least one white paper, but maybe an entire library like this organization right here. This is about HR, human resources training, and they put out white papers on hiring, managing employee costs, keeping employees happy, managing budgets, payroll, all that good stuff, diversity, everything. So they put out white papers, a whole series of them. So if this was your client, you wouldn't just write one white paper and say, have a nice day, see you later. No, they're going to go, okay, now we got another topic. Now that you did that one, let's do this one. And Lisa, I know you've experienced that.
I have experienced that. In fact, I've got a one client that I'm currently working on white papers with, and she's got like eight opportunities, right? We're spacing them out for budgetary reasons and everything, but eventually she's going to have 8 white papers because actually, you know, training really lends itself to a white paper because you have to explain why that training technique or why that particular thing is what works best. And a white paper is literally like the perfect vehicle to do that.
Yep. And I actually have done a series when I worked for a veterinary company that had a website platform just for vet practices. And we would do a monthly white paper on what veterinary practices really are missing out on when it comes to their website. It's not mobile friendly. Let's fix that. It's not, they're not using video. Let's fix that. So we were trying to put out a monthly topic that would bring them in and they would get the white paper. Then we could sign them up for a webinar and then they would get a demo invitation. So it was the perfect vehicle to bring in people who are trying to solve a problem, like my website's terrible and I'm not getting more clients, and showing them the way to get results without selling anything at this point. This is just like a discovery point for most people. So who publishes white papers? I mentioned that B2B mainly, but really any company that's selling anything that is new, like a breakthrough solution, it's complicated. For example, I have written white papers for companies that need to train their sales teams on cloud solutions and how that works. So a big company with lots of data might have a brick building down the road with all their data and their IBM machines. They need to move to the cloud. How does that work? It's like a massive undertaking. So we write a white paper to explain the process. And then the next step is to have a personal demo for your company. So those are kinds of things. If it's expensive. So if someone is going to be buying a fleet of vehicles for their shipping company or delivery company, they're not going to just go online and buy fleet of cars. That'll be $2 million, click, buy. That's not going to happen. There is a slow and steady buying cycle before someone can make a decision, and it often involves more than one person. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then if there's a major shift in the way a company operates. So again, I'm going to use the veterinary analogy because I worked in that world for quite a long time. So let's say there's a practice management platform or software that can do everything in one place, like keep medical records, do invoicing, set up schedules and appointments. Well, that's going to change the way the vet practice operates on a daily basis. So that, again, they need to be convinced and really comfortable that they should make that massive shift in their daily function. So that takes white papers and demos and other kinds of sales leads before they'll ever make a decision to buy. So that's really why companies need white papers. They're really trying to reach business buyers, mainly B2B. Again, there are a few instances where, you know, consumer white papers are handy and helpful, but really it's such a core tool. And I'm going to show you in a second how important it is for business to business companies. And it runs not just technology, but all kinds of industries. Equipment, tech and software are obvious, but then there's legal and financial services. So consulting firms, HR related training, shipping and logistics solutions, compliance. There's a lot of government compliance that has to go on, safety compliance, marketing, helping companies understand the massive explosive world of marketing. And then operations consulting, helping people find a more efficient and better way to operate their business. So B2B is 85% of that, just so you know. We've done some studies, and then there's another group, business to government, and that would be companies that can sell their solutions to government bodies like airplane parts for the military. Or, that's just one example, but there's lots of different types of organizations that are selling as their services and products to government bodies. And then there's the NGOs, which are, the government also includes policymakers. NGOs are non-government organizations, and those are like nonprofits that are appealing to government bodies to use their services or fund their services. So that's a teeny weeny group. Well, go ahead.
And in fact, I think in my research, what I found was that that is kind of where White Paper started. Policy advocacy in trying to put together a persuasive argument that says, hey, you should invest in this because this is going to help. And I think it started at the government, at the NGO sort of government level.
Right. That's very true. Yeah. And and then it evolved, boy, I don't know, decades ago. I've been writing white papers for, I hate to say how long, so I'm not going to, but a really long time. All right, so that's really the market. Now, you might be saying, I kind of touched on this, but the main goals for white papers is simply to generate a lead. And what we mean by that is somebody who's not aware of a solution, but they've got some big old problem, let's say cybersecurity, and someone in their company says, hey, you, go figure out a better solution to keep our data safe from cybersecurity issues. So that person's like, where do I find a better solution? I'm going to go online, cybersecurity solution for a healthcare company or something like that. And then that's where the discovery of the white papers comes in. Because if you do a great job with a white paper, it's going to be found in those searches. So that's really, and then once a prospect finds the white paper and they're compelled, well, first of all, it's usually sitting on a landing page where the prospect has to enter their email address and name. That becomes a lead that the company can then follow up with and their sales reps can follow up with in a bunch of ways, through a newsletter, through a webinar invitation, through a demo video sign up, all kinds of things. But that first awareness is called a lead. And so that's what your job will be, just to get the lead. You don't need to do any other selling or do anything else. Really, the white paper is going to be a tool to just bring in more and more buyers, potential buyers, to the client. It also might support a product launch. So there is a type of white paper called a backgrounder, and that is more a direct solution-focused paper specific to a brand, specific to a company. And so they might say how to save money or how to boost your sales team's results through Salesforce. And it's going to be a Salesforce white paper. So that's an obvious direct product launch. Maybe they have a new tool to close sales more effectively. So that's like a direct product thing. But it's still going to be more of an article, authoritative document than a sales pitch. The other thing is white papers can help clients, your clients, stand out from everybody else in their market. And some markets aren't even using them that much. So even better for you and your client. But a lot of industries use white papers like crazy. So your brilliant mind combined with what your client needs, you'll figure out how to make that white paper that you're writing for the client really stand apart, like with a wow, with attention that, okay, nobody's been talking about this, but we are. And so the prospect will clamor over there to see what that's about. And then re-engage prospects on that long customer journey I mentioned. So that's why there's a series. Lisa said there's a series of different things that her client can talk about. So if the first white paper just kind of piques their interest and they're like, this is a cool company, but I'm not ready to make a decision yet. And then they get another white paper because they gave their email address and they're like, oh yeah, you know, this actually is looking better and better. And maybe a third one is the needle tipper. Is that the right phrase? The tipping point where they might they might go ahead and sign up for something more concrete, like a demo. So it gives them a chance. A series of white papers give companies a chance to just tap their prospects on the shoulder and the leads and go, we've got some other great stuff for you too. And then support a detailed evaluation. So let's say that prospect of Lisa's client is really close to buying, but they've got to show it to their boss or the executive suite and do a presentation like, we've been investigating this solution. We're close to making a purchase recommendation, but we need you to see why we think it's great. And here's a white paper that really sums it all up. So that's how it works in corporate land. There's never, almost never, a single buying decision person in that journey. I've been in corporate offices and I know. So this is something I created, I don't know, 2 years ago now for AWAI to help members understand the scope of projects that you could potentially offer clients. And if you want to focus on white papers, it's mainly in the stage one content that builds traffic, awareness, and leads. It might be used in stage two where you're getting close to the sale, but most of the time I would say, and Lisa, I don't know if you agree with me, but it's more of that awareness building and traffic building content that then gets people excited and they become a lead. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I would say that's true. I mean, I think there's actually two places, right? The majority in the leads, and then those backgrounders that you talked about are really great pieces for the sales team to close the sale, you know, to basically help people make up their minds. But majority are leads. Yeah.
Okay. And I just wanted to, we have a link at the bottom of this slide. If you want to go check that out, there's a whole article about the customer journey and how all these projects can support different elements of the stages of sales. So check that out sometime, or you can just go to awai.com and type in customer journey and you'll find this article. But the chart is there too if you want to, you know, download it, blow it up, see more closely how it works. But that's, I just wanted to give you context where white papers fit into all of this. And with B2B clients, man, you could be writing all of this stuff and you could be writing many different pieces that support your white paper, like the landing page where people put in their email address. Is your landing page copy going to get people excited to then download the white paper? That's up to you. That can be. And you get paid extra. All right.
And the press release that says, hey, we've got this white paper out there and everything. It's pretty
yes.
cool.
And I've even seen situations where a trade association will republish or will do a press release on so-and-so client put out a great white paper on this new thing. And we just thought it was brilliant. And so that's giving it extra love and extra traffic, yep. which is a great goal.
They're super cool, super fun things.
Yeah. So now that we've talked on and on about this mysterious thing called the white paper, I thought we'd show you what they actually look like. And there are basically five necessary elements. I'm going to open them all up. All of them. Let's see. Boop. Yep. Okay. So typically they might be at the minimum 5 pages. At the maximum, they can be 25 pages. Most of them fall in the middle somewhere, 10 to 15 pages. And basically, it's an enlightening, factual, and highly useful content piece. So it's going to be something that solves a problem, something that benefits the audience, and something that gives them details and proof of the concept that's being presented there through all kinds of trustworthy data out there. So you might have leading authorities or leading thought leaders in an industry quoting on a trend that this white paper addresses through their solution. Or you might have some data on something seriously happening in the industry, like what happened during the pandemic. Well, everything got turned upside down, right? Remote employees, all that stuff. And then now the economic changes that are happening, white papers can address that. They just need to make sure they're very factual and that you find resources that you can point to that are credible. Because ultimately, white papers are all about trust. You're establishing your client as a trusted resource for a solution that is a wow for the prospect. Like I said, every white paper has a call to action at the end for some sort of next step. You don't want to leave them hanging. Like, well, that was interesting. Where can I find out more? Oh, well, good luck with that. No, you have a call to action that says this is the next step you can take to explore further. And then they're typically a PDF in the 8.5 by 11 size portrait so people can easily print them out if they want to. Sometimes they're in landscape, the wider format, but that's okay too. But I would say the majority are in the 8.5 by 11 portrait format, like piece of paper, like that. This size and easily printable. So that's pretty typical. I don't know if you've seen anything different there, Lisa.
No, that is pretty typical. I think it's because it looks more like a report when it's like that. And there, it kind of feels more like a real data driven kind of thing. So yeah, I think they are typically portrait format.
And it's easy to share too. I mean, I know from my experience in corporate America that, sometimes people are too busy to really pay attention to something you send an email, like a document. Well, I'll download it, but it looks like it's too much for me to bother with right now. But sometimes if you print it out and everybody sits around a table and goes through it together, or, you know, they can take it home or on the train or on the airplane or something like that, that's got value. So that's why a lot of times it's just a regular old 8.5 by 11 PDF format. They can print it, download it, whatever they want to do, share it. Yeah. So we're going to show you three samples here. Now, these were written by Gordon Graham, that white paper guy who has done a lot of teaching for AWAI, and he still does. And he has worked on a gazillion white papers. Each one has a separate goal, and each one is for a different purpose. So the first one is about solving a problem. And the problem is safety, right? The problem is being safe on the road, how different windshields can either hinder or advance safety. And so that's to influence policymakers on auto safety. The second one is what we call a numbered list. And this kind is about, so the first kind was problem solution, because there's a problem, safety, and this paper has a solution. Second one is a numbered list kind. Five questions to ask to pick the right online registration system. And that's for event planners very specifically. If you're having, if your client is holding a big event, there's a lot behind it. Valentina, our live events manager, knows well all the pieces and moving parts. And so they really, their goal as event managers is to make an event management process really easy for the person who wants to go to the event. So again, helping them pick the perfect online registration system is, there are five ways to do that. And then the last one is a backgrounder, and that is very much a brand specific solution, paper. And that's supporting a product launch, like we talked about. So, there's no mystery. You're not leading with a question or something on the cover. You're just saying, here's a new product. You got to check it out. And people who would be typical buyers for that product will likely be interested in that. All right, now this is one I wrote for that veterinary platform that we had over at LifeLearn. I was working there full time, and we every month we did a white paper on the issues that vet practices face. They are not marketers. They didn't go to school to become marketers. They don't know much about marketing. So our mission was to try to help them understand the problem and the solution. And the problem here was, most veterinary websites are not mobile responsive or mobile friendly, and they're missing the boat with local pet owners or pet parents who are on their phones going, where is the local vet? And they can't find them, and especially on their phones. So we went through that issue. It's a real problem, and they're missing the boat. So we talked about the problem, and then we talked about the solution in general. Here are five things you can do to make your website more mobile responsive. And then, by the way, at the end, we have a great solution called WebDVM4 platform. It's automatically mobile responsive. So bada boom, bada bing, check it out. Then this is the meat of it. So I basically first talked about the problem in the introduction, and then I talked about what a good mobile site looks like. And here's one that's kind of lame. Here's one that's a lot better and more helpful to a local pet parent. And then a tip on how to determine if your veterinary website is mobile friendly or not. There's a place they could go to put in their URL and see that it was not mobile friendly. And then, okay, what do we do now? You can try out our WebDVM4 platform and simply contact us for a personal, no obligation tour. That's it. So that one was 10 pages. Okay. So that's the structure basically. There's a lot more behind that. So that's why we're here today. We want to tell you that there are resources to help you really get into how this all works so you can master it. But first, let's talk about money. First, they're fun because they're so dang worthwhile for you. because if you enjoy researching fascinating topics, if you enjoy the idea that there are lots of clients who need you, and trust me, there are, if you enjoy a field where you can really specialize and there aren't a lot of white papers out there promoting themselves as such, there are a few dozen, but when you think that there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of companies, and even a handful of clients for you might need ongoing white paper work and ancillary projects like landing pages and stuff, you don't have to worry about competition, trust me. I mean, anyone right now, the software industry, I mean, Lisa, you work for Kodak, you've written white papers for Kodak, that's just one. What kind of industry is that again, as far as a whole?
Well, so what the part, Kodak has a bunch of different, they're in a bunch of different industries. What I wrote for was more of their scientific area, because they provide scientific solutions to people who are making products. So they make the stuff that goes into the products that other people make.
Well, there you go. See, so, I didn't even know that. Yeah. But they need you for a variety of white papers talking about the different aspects and advantages of their solution,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, cool. So as far as companies that make products for other companies, there are countless. I know one of our members, Steve Maurer, writes for the B2B industrial manufacturing niche, and it's all about parts and components and solutions that are better than what's out there now. So it's huge. It's just huge. I'm in the veterinary world mainly, but I've also written for the exciting land of commercial dumpsters. Woohoo! Who doesn't love that?
Wow, that is a clue you had there.
Yeah, pretty exciting, I'll tell you. And then I've written for early childhood education franchise owners, and the white paper was about learning through play. So you just never know what kind of category or topic or niche you're going to be writing about. And that's what's so much fun. You can focus on a niche that you know something about from your career or background. Like, let's say, you know, Liz Farr, who is a CPA, focused all her attention on accounting firms and accounting related companies. So that's a no-brainer for her. You might find that too, which is super fun, because clients will love that about you if you have some background in their market. I know that, Lisa, you've been training HR. That's your background. And that's why, you know, some of your work is in that world.
Yeah, most of the work that I go for, you know, the Kodak one was kind of just because I worked there in my corporate career. So then I did some stuff for them. But the clients I go seek are all in the training and education space. And I absolutely love writing those papers.
Yeah.
Work for them. Yeah.
No, I love them. I it's like you get to sink your teeth into being a Sherlock Holmes detective with your research, a great persuasive writer with your laid out beautiful argument on why this is such a good solution. And it's just a blast. It's like the best project, I think, for me. Anyway, maybe for you too. Hope so. But the work is really rewarding because you're making a difference to clients. So you're not just writing stuff, you're actually moving leads into their pipeline. And depending on what they sell, that could mean millions of dollars for clients. So that's why the last bullet, you earn great money writing white papers. So let me just show you something I found. First of all, there are some surveys out there asking B2B buyers what influences their decision when they're looking through, looking for solutions. So white papers are important to sales leads. Here was a great graphic I found. What are the most valuable content formats and sources for researching your B2B purchases? And the top two, which I kind of kludged together as white papers, research and survey reports and white papers. So a research and survey report can be a white paper. Like a new study on the importance of onboarding remote employees. That is also a white paper. So I put those together as the 1-2 punch for clients that you can help with, because that is so valuable to them.
It is. Actually, the last white paper I just did was a survey white paper.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then what makes them stand apart for clients is that when you're creating trust, you can really offer a powerful, unique, and viable solution to that frustrated audience who's got a nagging problem. It might be an industry-wide problem, or it might be specific to a certain sub-market in the industry. But if you're offering a solution, it really makes a huge difference to the reader and the client. So that's why it's valuable. It's really going to help help decision makers get, and I missed the last word there. they help decision makers get information that will really help them solve a problem, and they can become superheroes at their company for doing so. All right. Sorry about the typo. Now, I did some research on pay, and I found this recent article. There are several on the ranges, and they do run from $2,500 a paper, and that's for maybe a short one, up to $10,000 just for the writing if it's more complex and there's more work that you're going to be doing, like interviewing a few different thought leaders or people in the company, and you might even do a case study, and that's going to be part of the white paper. So if you're thinking, you know, well, okay, $10,000, that's pretty good. And then the other pieces might be another $10,000 each, you know, illustrating it, promotion. And by the way, you might be involved in helping write the promotion stuff. But let's just talk about the writing of the white paper here. A client may spend $30,000 on a white paper when all is said and done. And why would they do that? The answer is return on investment. If that is back to that slide where they said white papers are like among the top two sources of information when they're searching for a solution, that's what that means. A great white paper will attract that audience looking for them. People are looking for white papers when they're in that B2B world and they're having to find a solution. And, you know, they're butts on the line. They've got to find a good solution, right? So if your client's white paper is like, I found a great solution I can bring to the company and show them and explore further, then they end up buying, and it could be millions of dollars at stake here. That's why clients are willing to pay you 10 grand. It's one of the most powerful pieces they have in their marketing arsenal. So, okay. And that's how it becomes a $1,000 a page project, because if it's 10,000 and you're writing a 10 page piece, do the math. It's 1,000 a page. So we're not kidding around here. All right. Four secrets to writing white papers. Again, a lot of writers don't know this stuff, and we're going to dig deep into this in an upcoming training that I'm going to talk to you about in a minute. But basically, you want to think like a lawyer. Think like, I'm so old now that I remember Old Ironsides, those shows where they solved the clues and they came into the, how about Boston Legal? Anyway, I don't watch lawyer shows anymore, but always, they gather a mountain of evidence, and they're looking for every clue, every fact, everything that they can back up their hunch or their mission to solve the crime, right? So that's what you're doing with a white paper. You're finding every clue, fact, figure. They have to be credible. You're looking at trends. You're looking at current stuff. One very quick mention about AI and ChatGPT. They will admit right on ChatGPT that their information is only as recent as 2021. If you're writing a white paper, this is 2023, people, that won't fly. You have to do your own research and find credible, wonderful sources and facts to back up. And experts, if there's an industry expert or the client has one on staff, that's going to be great to include too. The bottom line is you want to use only credible sources that industry people will recognize or at least trust because of the way it's presented and the source, you know, with it. So you're going to think like a lawyer. You're going to argue like Aristotle. Now, this is a Gordon Graham thing, admittedly, and he just, you know, he's all about making a persuasive argument with proof. So there isn't any way that someone can go, well, I don't believe that. Well, you're really? Because it's right here. The data is showing me in hard black and white you know, figures. So if you have proof, use it. If you don't have enough proof, use logic. You know, wouldn't you want to save $50,000 a year in employee training costs? Hello. And then appeal to values. That's another thing too you can bring in. Even if you do have proof and logic, bring in values that matter to the company. If, for example, a company is all about sustainable practices, weave that into your white paper if you're working for a client that has a solution for sustainable manufacturing. That's just an example. And then sprinkle in a touch of passion. These are not boring, cold, institutional documents. These are one-on-one conversations that understand the prospect's pain or problem and is offering to help. That's the bottom line. We've got help for you. Here's this amazing way, new way to help you with your problem. So I don't know if you want to mention anything on that, Lisa.
No, I think, you know, that just sort of to talk about that, the paper I just did with the survey was trauma-informed supervision. So it's basically arguing that your supervisors should use trauma-informed principles to supervise their staff. And there was proof in there, but there was also logic and the values, right? It's not just that the proof was you retain more employees, right? Your employees don't turn over, you spend less money and all of that. There was all of that in there. But then there was also the humanity, if you value the people that you're working with, you will treat them this way. You will do this. And because they were talking to people who are supervisors in social, like human kind of organizations, it appealed to their value and the touch of passion. So that's kind of exactly the way that you build those arguments. And it was so much, it makes sense. If you do it right, it just flows.
Yeah. And that audience will know what trauma-informed is. I don't know, but I'm not the audience. So that will catch their attention because they do know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because those of you asking what she means by trauma-informed, I don't know, but we're not the audience.
Right. That's right. It just means that you supervise in a way that basically helps people do well, regardless of what their background has been, what they've been through.
Ah, okay. So. Wonderful. Sounds like a great, I can't wait to read that. Okay. And then the third thing is write like a journalist. And journalists are very clear and matter of fact. They use short sentences and paragraphs. They smoothly transition from section to section. They usually have a graceful way of using their sources woven into a point they're trying to make. And they write for busy people, right? Articles can be long, but they also can be broken up with subheads. So if someone is a scanner, they get the point. But the thing is, it's not dry toast. You're not writing, like people think of business to business or corporate writing as really boring and dry. Nothing could be further from the truth. If it's an audience that has a passion about what they're doing, like veterinary practices, then papers written to them should be talking to their world and what they care about, which is animal safety and health. So that is not dry or boring at all. So, you know, really think about it as a wonderful way to offer help to your audience. All right. But in a journalistic way. So it's very factual and helpful and believable. And then the final thing is really, I can't iterate this enough. Don't sell in a white paper. It will not work because people are not expecting that in a white paper, especially B2B buyers who've been around the block a few times. They expect really helpful information backed by facts and data. So they want information they trust. They want to discover a helpful solution with solid proof or evidence and then a way to explore more. Like I said, that call to action. And if you bug them with a sales pitch or shout at them or shove solutions at them with a price tag or anything like that, they may never buy from you and they may never look at your white paper again. Actually, that kind of white paper, you know, this is a Gordon's tip again. He said might even lose sales because it turns people off so much. Oh, we don't want that. Okay, so we've shown you a lot. And maybe you can see why I'm enthusiastic about white papers. I just love writing them. I think they're amazingly helpful to companies. They actually make a difference to your clients. And I think they're fun to write. So how do you get started? Well, learn all you can. Check out B2B company sites with white papers. And what I've done is go out there and look online, white paper on elderly care facilities, or white paper on corporate travel, or whatever you're interested in, white paper on running a restaurant, and you will find some. And then look at the job postings on LinkedIn or on B2B marketing agency websites. They will often have a writing posting. A lot of B2B agency websites will have a careers button and you push on it and then it says, we need writers. Are you a writer who gets B2B marketing? Look at what they're looking for. And then build your skills, create a white paper sample or two or seven, and you'll be on your way pretty well. Now, you also want to promote your white paper services, like Christina Haviland here. With her permission, we are posting her Facebook profile, LinkedIn profile. And she says she's a scientist and a white paper writer supporting biotech and other science-based companies. Very clear. Yay, I'm in a science or biotech corporation and I need help. I'm gonna talk to her, right? So your goal is to reach the right contacts at the right time when they're thinking about a white paper. LinkedIn is a great place. If you have your own website, that's great too. But you can even just start with LinkedIn because trust me, recruiters, corporate VPs of marketing and agency folks are on LinkedIn and they type in white paper writer and bada boom, bada bing, there you'll be. So there are also B2B groups on LinkedIn. And so join them and start talking about different issues related to marketing and things like that. I wouldn't pitch my services to the group and hard sell yourself because nobody likes that. That's like spammy. But you can have an intelligent conversation and say something like, you know, when I'm writing white papers about this subject, blah, 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 blah. And somebody will go, when you're writing white papers? And they'll click on your profile and check you out. Nice. Now, remember that there just aren't tons and tons of writers out there promoting that they write white papers. So most of the B2B marketers out there really don't know anyone who specializes in them. So you can be their secret weapon. You can be the person who actually gets it and knows how white papers work well. And so keep going, keep going, keep going. And we've got resources to help you. First and foremost, we have our articles. We have tons of free articles on all kinds of subjects. But if you go to our search bar there and type in white paper, you'll find the content we have on making a living as a white paper writer and what that looks like. And I think that Lisa might have written some of those. We also have.
I might have, and yeah.
And I was going to say, I didn't put that on here, but B2BWritersInternational.com. Duh.
I was just going to say that B2BWritersInternational.com. Same thing. If you type white paper into the search bar, not all of our white paper content is free, but you will find all of our free content when you type that in.
Yep. So that's a bunch of free stuff to really put your toe in the water and see how it feels. And then we do have a self-study, self-paced program called How to Become a Professional White Paper Writer, written by none other than Bum-ba-da-bing. Lisa Christopher was a team effort and she drove the car and it was wonderful. So that's something you might want to check out. Here's the link, awi.com/whitepaper. And then coming right up, bada boom, bada bing, we're going to have a live AWAI certification program starting up on February 27th to become certified as an AWAI verified white paper specialist. And what that is the opposite of self-paced, self-study, isolated learning. It's actually joining Lisa and I live for 4 weeks, and we're going to complete the training with you. And it is based on the foundation of the self-study, but there's so much more that we're going to bring to the table. A lot of the material is from that white paper guy, Gordon Graham. I got to give him a shout out because he really is the one who set the bar on writing great white papers. So he's graciously allowed us to use some of his material, which we'll walk through. We also have our own experience, and we have a special other guest, Steve Slonwhite, who is one of the primo B2B thought leaders out there on writing and copywriting, content writing, lead generation, everything. He's going to join us for a session. So you'll get expert advice on the way with all four of us, really. And you'll be part of an active group learning together in a private Facebook group where you can ask us anything. And what I find in those groups is that members help each other before I even get a chance to chime in. So that is a value to all our CERT programs. We have that private Facebook group, which elevates everyone's experience together. You will get 20 samples and other resources, checklists, templates, bonuses, everything you need to have in your toolbox as a white paper writer for the rest of your career. Starting at the end of this training until the rest of your career, you can access all that stuff for yourself. You will be writing a white paper for a real client, and we'll reveal that if you are interested. But and then you can get professional feedback to strengthen your sample. So you'll have your first sample ready to go when you talk to real clients. You can get certified, and you'll pass a test, and you'll turn in your sample to be scored by our expert review team. And then you could possibly earn $5,000 because we'll pick one of the specs, and choose it as the winner for this class. So, yeah. And by the way, we're going to go in depth on getting clients for white papers, too. So the link is right there. And I can't read the whole thing because this is blocking me. Okay, awai.com, perfect gig. That's what we love to call it because Lisa and I think it really is the perfect gig. yeah. Cause I'm not actually much of a sales copywriter, really. I love B2B, and B2B is quieter on that side and just more, here's a solution and here's why it's fantastic and you need to explore it. Bing, bang, bong. And then the B2B buyer goes to his boss. Hey, check this out. So I love writing that stuff. So I think that's it, and we have time for questions. There's the link again if you want to check out our certification coming right up the end of this month. So, let's take it away with questions. I'm going to open up the question and Q&A.
Well, we got a bunch. All right. We have 35 questions.
Okay. First one I see is, what is the difference from case studies? Great question. Case studies are actually often rolled into a white paper as peer-to-peer proof. So a case study is a success story. So let's say Kodak had a customer who used that system or that product that Lisa's talking about and had great results with it. That is one form of proof, and that's a story that Kodak can post on its own, but they also can weave it into the white paper to complete that proof section on why this product is amazing for you, dear reader, because your peer, Fred Jones over here, used it and had amazing results, and that's how a case study kind of works. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. You want to take the next one?
Yeah. Since the recent mass layoffs that started with tech and are still going on, have there been indications of less demand for freelance copywriting work? I don't know the answer to that, but I will tell you logically my gut, and then Pam, you can chime in. But when companies struggle to meet their sales numbers, the last thing they want to do is stop marketing, because then they really won't meet their sales numbers. Right. So they actually really need to pick the most effective marketing pieces and get the word out there. And as Pam's already said, white papers are extremely effective. So I don't see that affecting us. But Pam, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
Well, I'm only going to speak from my perspective of what I've seen. I have seen that most of the layoffs are technical in nature. And it just said my internet is unstable, so hopefully everything's okay. I might stop my screen share so we can just talk. Everything okay, you guys? Okay.
Yep.
I have seen that most of the tech layoffs have been in the programming and production side. And maybe they have laid off staff copywriters, but I would think because they don't want the overhead of full-time writers that they may be more inclined to hire freelancers on a project-by-project or department basis, you know, like product line basis. So that's my guess. I've seen this go cyclical over the years, and I've been in companies that went, oh, we should stop marketing because we're ahead of the curve or we can't afford it. And then it was like they really regretted that. Yeah. So I think we're in a great spot as freelance writers to help them keep chugging along without a staff overhead, and pick and choose projects they want us to help them with. So, okay, I write similar documents for my day job. Yep. What's the realistic picture of finding suitable clients? Well, anonymous attendee. Good for you. You already have samples and experience and knowledge, and that's amazing. The realistic picture of finding clients, there are steps to take. It's kind of up to you to take those steps. But trust me, there are, I think I put in, well, not white paper specifically, but content jobs on LinkedIn. There were, I don't know, 300,000 content related jobs, and a lot of them are for B2B companies and they want white paper skills as part of that. Now, those are the full-time jobs. Some of them are remote and freelance, but all I've heard from anyone that's in the know, like Gordon and Steve Sloan White and other B2B experts, is that business is booming for freelancers because companies can't fall behind their competition. If one of their or a few of their strongest competitors are churning out amazing content, they've got to keep up or even get ahead. They've got to be in the game with those competitors or they'll be invisible. So I really think that that's not quite a worry. And I haven't seen that. I've seen a lot of people getting gigs for white papers and other content jobs, even among our own membership. Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. How's a white paper different than a business case? So the white paper is a persuasive argument, right? A business case also helps you figure out whether or not something is the right thing for you to use at your company, like a business case for a new piece of software or something. But a white paper is not going to be at all the same thing. There will be business case elements in the white paper, right? When you choose to use a system that does X, you save Y dollars and that kind of thing. But a business case specifically is usually a case. It is a specific one-to-one. This company is looking to install this software and here's the business case. So the business case might come out of a white paper, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, Pam, if you have any other.
No, I think that's perfect. A perfect answer. It's very specific. Business cases are more specific. Is LinkedIn an appropriate place for a white paper about specific needs or services in a healthcare setting? Sure. I mean, if you have it on your website, I wouldn't post the white paper on LinkedIn. I would post a comment about it. We've just published this white paper and then a link for people to go check it out. Because the main beauty of a white paper is that landing page where clients will collect the prospect's information, name and email address at the very least, so they can follow up. And if you post it on LinkedIn, that chance might not be there. If you're posting the white paper right there, here you go, have at it. You don't want to do that. You want to gate it for your clients so they can collect the leads. Okay, Michael, I want to tackle this one.
How are white papers related to social justice advocacy as with government representatives and agencies? So, you know, Pam showed you that pie chart early on in the presentation about NGOs and what percent of white papers they represent. So that would be an NGO hiring you to put together a persuasive argument, right? A white paper on bail reform or prison sentences or food, access to food, you know, whatever your social justice kind of bent is, it would be the NGOs who would be hiring you to write those white papers that they would then present or lobby or advocate to the government. Well,
yep, great. Karen asks, how do you handle having more than one client within the same industry? For instance, in the global shipping industry, Maersk and MSC, I hope I pronounced that right, are competitors. Do you approach the industry or clients within it? The answer is yes. I have worked in the veterinary industry for 312 years, and there are tons of tech companies in that industry alone. And I could work for another 300 years and probably never work with a direct competitor. I don't have to. I don't want to. Because there are so many companies in every niche market, you can quickly figure out who are direct competitors and steer away from that. For example, I was writing a lot of copy for a company that makes veterinary equipment like exam tables and bathing tubs and grooming things, all of that. Well, they have like three or four direct competitors. I would not work for those other competitors because I will tell my client, I'm going to make you dominate the world in veterinary equipment. So that's my veterinary equipment client. But does the veterinary industry have other kinds of companies? Oh, hell yes. Oh, sorry. Heck yes. You know, they have technology and pet food and practice management software and all these different types of companies in that one industry. I would imagine in the shipping industry, there are lots of companies. And keep in mind, you only need a few. Maybe four clients that will keep you busy all year with tons of different content stuff, including white papers. So I wouldn't worry about that, and I would not seek out direct competitors deliberately. But
excellent.
Yeah.
So can white papers include writing scientific papers from Linda? So that depends. That depends on what you mean. So I wrote white papers about scientific products at Kodak. But I did not write a scientific paper. Remember, a white paper is a marketing document, right? It's a persuasive argument. So like if I think of a scientific paper, I'm thinking, you know, charts with means and graphs and, you know, deviations from the mean and all specs and everything like that. That's not going to be what you have in your white paper. What you have in your white paper is going to be why this particular chemical or scientific process or whatever is best to use for this application in this industry. Okay, so I hope that clears it up a little bit. You are selling somebody on an idea. You are You are persuading somebody to adopt your point of view or your idea.
Perfect. And I've written for scientific companies, and boy, what a blast that is. I mean, I wrote many pages of content for a company that makes the solutions for COVID tests when the pandemic first hit.
Oh, cool.
But that was a fascinating project. So scientific, yes, bring it on. Love it. Okay. Laura asks, we live in a world full of non-credible sources. Where do you find good data? It depends on the industry, but there are usually trade associations and trade journals. That's a great place to start because those are vetted. For example, in the veterinary industry, no pun, but they will not publish journal articles unless they've been cleared through a medical panel who says, yes, this is correct. So when the AHA, Animal Hospital Association, puts out a new study on canine leukemia or something like that, that has been vetted by the board. And they will not put it out unless it's correct. So in industries, I don't know if that happens in every industry, but there are trade journals and trade associations that are credible and trustworthy. We have some tips in our training about what isn't a good source, and we will go into that in the live classes. But you can find authoritative, you know, like if you're doing a white paper on financial management, Warren Buffett says, yes, everyone believes him, pretty much. So you can find them out there no matter what industry you're talking about.
Excellent. And the next one, Michael, yes, exactly. So he says the point is to enhance the credibility of the company that publishes the white paper solution to a common industry problem. That is exactly the point. You want your client to be seen as a credible source, as the company to go to for this particular industry problem. Exactly right.
Yep. Okay, Carol, are there certain companies requesting white papers more than others? Example, HMOs versus car sales. Well, it depends. because car sales to consumers probably wouldn't be using white papers, but fleet car sales, like let's say if you're buying a fleet of cars for your rental company or for your corporate executives or for your shipping and delivery drivers, that is a whole different thing. And they indeed would use white papers to educate that audience and help them choose them. So it really just depends. If you're interested in a specific industry, look at the B2B side of it. Look at the vendors, the suppliers, the consultants, the training companies, logistics, shipping, all that stuff. Every industry has that back side of business support to keep businesses running of all sizes. So yeah, I mean, any industry I can think of, if you look at the business to business side, they could be probably using white papers. Do you sign your white papers? No, typically, unless you're on staff with the company, like I was with LifeLearn, then you can put your name on it, but you're usually ghostwriting. You are a writer for hire and you provide them a service of great copy and they pay you and say, thank you very much. And it looks like it comes from that client. That's pretty much how that works with most content, really. But especially white papers. Wouldn't you say that's true, Lisa?
Yeah, I would agree. Yep.
Okay, Monica. Go ahead. We missed that.
I have the next one is Feta. My interest is in philanthropy and international development, Africa, for example. I'm at a loss to know if there's a need for white papers in that space. So I would say, again, like the answer a little bit earlier, NGOs, anybody who is advocating for international development, anybody who is investing, there could even be companies, for-profit companies who are investing in business development in Africa who want to persuade, you know, sometimes you need an ecosystem, so they want to persuade other people to do the investments. There is an opportunity there. I don't know how big it is, but certainly there would be an opportunity.
Great. I'm just typing an answer because I think I already answered it about your name. It doesn't matter because your name is never on the white paper. It's from the client's brand. So I'm just going to put that. Or as a ghostwriter.
Right.
Okay. Monica. Hi, Monica. Who pays for the, how are you, the Q&A just jumped.
It's moving, right.
How realistic is it to write a white paper without the budget to pay for optics? I think you mean visuals, images, charts, all that stuff. You can supply some suggested images and there's, you know, Pixabay.com and other places where you can get royalty-free images to use in them. So that shouldn't be a concern. I mean, Lisa, I don't know if you've ever run into that where they won't pay for any images, but it's their loss if they won't. But also there are some free solutions that you could offer.
Yeah, I have not run into that. I mean, we have done low budget images before with clients, right, by using free resources and things like that. But I've never had anybody struggle to and remember, even though the white paper is a marketing document and images are important, the persuasive argument is the key to the paper. So you really only need to use images that support that persuasive argument.
And there's a lot you can do also with just color blocks that point out a call out.
Formatting.
And structure. Yeah. There's a lot you can do without images if you're really stuck. Okay, Michael, who pays for these papers and how do we find these buyers? Well, basically, marketing departments have a budget every year in corporations that I've worked in and pretty much worked with. And they have a marketing budget that also has within that a writer budget. So it's typically the marketing team or the marketing department that you're working with. And those are your target audiences anyway, who might be on LinkedIn searching for white paper writers. That's how you match up. And there are other ways to market yourself too. Gosh, on Inside AWAI, we've got so many sessions on finding clients that please peruse those. But if you just really focus your LinkedIn profile on offering white paper services and you work on that in groups and talk about it, the marketing VPs should probably find you. But that's who is the client pretty much. Do writers ever get royalties? The B2B world is, we're both shaking our heads. No, the B2B world is not a royalty world. They don't pay per performance. They aren't set up that way. They just have a big old budget and they go, okay, 10 grand for a white paper, you're in. And you write the white paper, they pay you, and then you say, what do you need next? And that's how it works. It's just pay per piece. Okay.
Should white papers include SEO? So I would say yes and no. Yes, they should. But white papers are typically PDFs, and the bots don't always crawl PDFs and stuff. So it's really, what's really important is the landing page, the descriptions around everything, all of the marketing material that you put around promoting that white paper is where your SEO goes.
Yeah, like if you have a case study page or you have a blog talking about the white paper, that's where all the SEO would go, because she's right. The document itself isn't really going to be crawled by Google so much. They do some PDFs. I do see some PDFs show up, but you really want that gate again.
Yeah.
So the pages that are related to the gate part are where you optimize.
Right. The pages in front of the gate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so what are typically the industries that deploy white papers in their marketing strategy? The answer is all of them. All industries that are selling to businesses, mainly, all of them. You name an industry, and yes, you can try to stump me. I don't know, but really, any industry I can think of that's selling goods and services to businesses to help them make things, run, operate, do billing, whatever it is they're doing, that there are businesses behind that, and they would absolutely deploy white papers to present their solutions.
You heard Pam even did dumpsters, right? Commercial dumpsters.
Dumpsters! So. Commercial dumpsters. Woo-hoo! I've also written about like air compressors, commercial air compressors. I'm telling you, it's fun. All right, Steve Maurer. Would you price a white paper more on length or complexity or a combination of both? Yes, I would. usually there's a range. And once you have a scope of the job, you can pretty much look at your range that you're going to work with. So is this a $4,000 white paper or is this a $10,000 white paper? It's what's going to be involved as the writer. Am I going to have to interview 3 thought leaders? Am I going to be writing a case study as part of this? Am I going to be doing a survey and then taking the results? It really depends on what you're going to be doing and the time it'll take you. So don't go lower than, you know, $2,500 if it's a short white paper, because then they might not believe that you have the skills if you're selling yourself short.
Right.
So be bold out there.
Yeah, I mean, figure out how much time it's going to take you and do your internal rate. You might not know how many pages the paper is going to end up being, right? Because you haven't done your research yet and everything. So to Pam's point, it's really about the amount of time you think it's going to take you based on the steps you have to follow to be able to write the paper.
Yep.
Okay. Is the cost charged for one submission or several submissions on the same subject? So I have always quoted white paper by white paper. I haven't although like it might be a package of a white paper, a landing page, a press release, that kind of stuff. But for any given white paper, I've always quoted that white paper and whatever else I'm going to do around that white paper. I don't know, Pam, if you...
I you can package it a few different ways, and I haven't tried this yet, but you can package white paper campaigns. So I'm going to not just do your white paper, but I'll also do the landing page and the thank you email that goes out when they download, and maybe even the demo presentation video. You could package that. So it's really up to you. Okay, let's see now. Yes. Did we cover how to get clients? We did talk about that briefly in this presentation. We have a lot of resources inside AWAI on getting clients, but in the live class we're doing, the certification class, we have a whole live session focused on just that. And you'll meet a couple of white paper writers who are landing gigs and happy to talk to you about it. So that's part of our training. I'm going to put the slide up again with the link just in case anybody missed it. If you want to check out the live training program we're going to be doing, there it is. Perfect gig. I think it is. All right. How do I move the Q&A box out of my way? Okay. Go ahead, Lisa, if you want to tackle the next one.
Yeah. So the next one from Brittany is, my niche is mental health and wellness and parenting. Are there white paper opportunities in these? I definitely mental health. I've written white papers in the mental health field. But one of the things that you just have to keep in mind is generally white papers are B2B. So if you're writing a white paper for parent that's targeted to parents, I'm not familiar with a whole lot of white papers in that space, but as long as the audience for the white paper is a business who's going to invest a lot of money in whatever the your client is selling, then yeah, it should be a good opportunity for a white paper.
And again, I wrote a white paper a few years ago for a high-end educational preschool franchise who will not be named right now, but they put out a white paper for their franchisees, their schools, all over the country who are managing the education, and it was learning through play. So it was geared toward the school teachers, the school managers of those franchise offices, not the parents, but then it's educating those school owners, the franchisees, on how to educate parents about learning through play and what they're doing for that. So there is a tie-in in that way. Okay.
Yeah.
To niche or not to niche? That is the question. I think when you're starting out, get any client you can, you know, put out your shingle on LinkedIn that you're a white paper writer. If you have a specific niche, like I always use Liz Farr because she's a CPA and that's who she works for. That's great because financial companies, accounting firms, those kinds of companies will, accounting software companies will find her and go, yay, there's Liz. She's in our court. And you may find that if you have a specific background in your career that so far, but I don't think you have to. Really up to you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think having white paper in your LinkedIn profile description is going to bring leads to you anyway. When you answer the finding credible sources question, can you please address the AI aspect of that now that more and more is being written or even stated by AI? So one of the things, you're probably talking about ChatGPT specifically, but one of the things that I know is it doesn't give you sources, and you need sources to credibly make any claims in a white paper. So while you can use AI to help you sort of develop the path that you want to go down to research your white paper and to find those sources, you're not going to be able to use AI to write the paper.
And even,
and I don't know, Sam, if you have a different opinion.
Well, current sources, again, I was on chat.
And they have to be current. Yeah.
Yeah, I was on ChatGPT just the other day doing an experiment for local businesses and can they use it? And I said, what are the limitations of ChatGPT content? And they said, well, we only go to 2021. So that gives you a clue that it's not a great source at all for something happening in 2023, right? So I don't think it's, I mean, it might give you ideas on topics to put in your white paper.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure about that. So
I've used it for ideas on, okay, if I say top 10 problems in this, right? I've used it to say, oh yeah, I want to look into this, but then I've gone and done the research for that myself. Right.
Okay. Cheryl, to create my own sample of a white paper, how do you suggest I look for possible topics? Well, I would start by looking for white papers on Google. And somebody else, where do you find a white paper library? You can literally go on Google. I don't use the word literally often, but you literally can do this. Type in white paper for whatever subject it is. And then you can look at white papers and see which ones are boring and lame and see which ones actually sound interesting and then check them out. that's really a great place to start. In our live training, we're going to dissect white papers that work and really talk about in depth great models and best practices for each component of a white paper. That's why it's advanced training. It's you can start from ground zero, not have a clue about white papers, but by the end, you will be really advanced on that, on those aspects. That's why we do certification on this. So hope you check it out.
How long does the average white paper take to write? From Greg. So Greg, the answer is it depends on whether you're asking applied time or elapsed time. So a white paper applied time typically takes between 30 and 50 hours to write. But elapsed time, it's going to be 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, depends on your client, how many people at your client are reviewing and feeding back on the paper, and whether you're working with an illustrator at the client. So the whole process itself can take a number of weeks, but your applied time that you're actually working on the paper is probably between 30 and 50 hours, most likely.
I'm typing an answer here. Yeah, we talked about the library, so just Google is your best friend. You can Google white papers for, and then put it whatever industry you're interested in, or great examples of white papers. You can Google that and you will find lots of samples to look at. There is no like library, except individual companies will have a library of their white papers, and some trade associations might have a collection of different white papers in their industry. But it takes some Google legwork to find examples. Okay, what are the most important skills? Writing mechanics, research. Is it possible to write for a company whose product you're not particularly familiar with? All of that. And you can learn those skills. If you love writing and you love article writing in particular, that gives you a little bit of a head start. But honestly, if you take any training from us, we walk you through the mechanics of how to do the research, how to write your different sections of a white paper, what the best practices are, all of that. So, yes, I mean, it's all important. And that's why, you know, getting training to offer a $10,000 project is a good idea, because then you'll know how to deliver.
Elizabeth, how closely do we work with graphic designers? So you as the writer will work with whoever's doing the graphics on the paper, for sure, whether it's somebody at your client who's doing it, or whether you've hired somebody, like subcontracted somebody to do the graphics, depending on the arrangement, you will have to be working with the graphic person, at least to some extent, on the paper, because they come together to create the effectiveness of the white paper.
I'm typing another answer if you want to tackle the next question.
Audrey, I know of the Better Business Bureau. Do you have advice on how to be sure you're writing for an honorable business? Have you ever later regretted your assistance via excellent writing with a non-trustable company? So, Audrey, specifically with respect to white papers, I think it would be tough to get yourself involved with a company, a non-honorable company, because you have to do so much upfront meeting with the client and understanding their product and what I will say, falling in love with their product, that you will know really early on whether or not you are working with a company whose product is actually going to deliver what they say it's going to deliver. So I wouldn't have that worry with white papers. And Pam, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
No, because I was typing an answer and wasn't hearing you.
She was just asking how you can avoid getting involved with companies that aren't very above board. And the other thing that you can do is follow best practices from a copywriting perspective, or from a freelance perspective, get half up front. Have a contract in place where there's a kill fee and some agreements and things like that, so that if they don't live up to their end of the bargain, you at least get compensated for the work that you've done to that point.
Great. All right, usual time frame. Lisa did talk about that. The writing time is maybe 20 to 40 hours, depending on how complex it is, but that doesn't happen all at once. you have a timeline of a few weeks to a few months to work with the client back and forth. You're going to interview them. What do they need? What do they want to sell? Who's the audience? Then you're going to create an outline. Then you're going to get buy-in on the outline. And then you're going to have an executive summary that you write, which is like the premise of the whole paper. Client buy-in again. So this could take a little while depending on how responsive the client is able to be, depending on all the other things they're juggling. The other part of Mary's question, do you ever find yourself finding the client really doesn't offer the best solution or you're not a believer in it? I have not found that, but Lisa, I don't know if you can talk. I haven't found that.
I haven't found that either. The only thing that I will say is I did do one piece for somebody who even their salespeople said it's really just the same as everybody else's. So I dug deeper myself into that and found out that really they did have an advantage that they just weren't seeing. And we focused on that. So no, I've not had that situation personally.
Right. Great. Thank you, Mary, though. Good question. Cindy, adding to the pricing, do you always know ahead of time what you're including? Yeah, that is the scope conversation you have with your client right up front. You're going to ask them, okay, what kind of materials can you or your team provide me to get started? Who am I going to be interviewing? How many people? Is there a case study do you want me to include, and who would that be? Are there any study findings that you are giving me? So you start out with what they'll give you and what they want to include. And so that really gives you a finite scope. And then you'll say, all right, so it sounds like I'm going to be doing about 10 pages and you already have a case study I can include, so I don't have to do that, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to say probably 8,000 for this white paper because I will have to interview other people, da, 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 da. Whatever it is, you will get all the scope up front, then you'll propose your fee. Then the client says, no problem, let's go, typically. And then you're off to the races. So yeah, you'll know exactly what's supposed to be in it before you get going. Steve Maurer has another question. Are white papers mostly for high ticket or high tech items? I don't know. I haven't seen every white paper in the world. I would say obviously high ticket and high tech items are conducive to white papers, but a web platform for veterinary practices is not really a huge investment for them. They might pay $497 up front and then a monthly fee for maintenance. And that's not a big deal to the veterinary practice, but it's a huge deal to the software company, because if they line up 50 veterinary practices and they lock them in for ongoing monthly fees, that's great, but it's not a high ticket item. It's not really high tech either. It's pretty basic. So I don't know. I think it's more about the value to the audience of the solution.
I think it's the considered purchase, right? In B2B, we talk about the considered purchase. Because I know I wrote, for specialty chemicals, and not all the chemicals are high ticket either, but it's the understanding that you can get a really tiny thing of chemicals, or you can get a 2-floor vat worth of chemicals, and you can get like the discussion is on the complexity and or the understanding of the offering. And so I think that high tech and high ticket are probably perfect for white papers, but there are probably a whole lot of other products that don't fall into that also make great white paper subjects.
Yep. I'm answering another question here. Sorry.
Do you write one first and then try to sell it? How do you start as a newbie? Do you write a white paper first and try to sell it? I'm not. So you would be writing a white paper on behalf of a client. So I'm not sure how you could write a white paper before you've been hired to write it, unless you're writing to sell your own services, but then you wouldn't sell the white paper. So I'm not quite sure I understand that question.
Yeah, it would be more of a sample. You just show that you have the ability, and you would be selling your services, and working to price and get approval for a white paper you're going to write for the client. And the sample you wrote is just proof that you know what you're doing. So yeah, you're not selling that white paper. You're actually using it as a sample to convince the client that they should hire you. So hope that helps. Let's see, plagiarism, gathering facts. Well, you just have to really look for trusted sources. And we do go into that in major detail in the class, but very shortly, like again, those trusted trade association websites, journals, conferences, thought leaders that people know in the industry. There are a lot of ways to find reputable sources. And plagiarism, you're going to be writing original content and you might quote a thought leader, make it very clear it's a quote, and put the source in the source section. Sources are your backup. So you can prove that nothing is plagiarized and things that you did pull from another website are attributed properly with the source. So,
right. So Nolan's asking about if you've got a sample, but if you've written for a company, but they won't let you use their sample, should you do a couple for fun or pro bono, or would you not do pro bono? So it's kind of a two-part question. So I would certainly, have some kind of a white paper sample on your available to send out. So you could ask the company that you wrote the white paper for, hey, maybe I can't post it, but could I send it to somebody if they wanted to see a sample of the white paper I did? So you could ask that. The other thing that you could do is, yeah, you could write a pro bono one. It's a lot of work to do pro bono, but the benefit of it probably outweighs the amount of work that you have to put in up front on that, because white papers pay a lot of money. So if that's what's needed to get your clients, I would do it. I don't know, Pam, if you have any.
I think having a sample that you create, if you want to write for the veterinary industry, for example, create something out of what you've read or something, like maybe you're a dog owner and you're seeing a lot of things about tech for dogs. You could theoretically write a white paper for yourself as a sample on technology for dogs. So and use some amazing resources out there and create something fantastic. You could also write a white paper about your white paper services. So I've done that before on my contentclear.com website. I wrote a white paper on working with, the five steps to making sure your website is, first impression is strong. And that was, is it clear? Is it customer focused? The five C's. I kind of made that up, but I wrote a white paper about that. And then I offered that to people who would come in and find me. And, that was a proof that I know how to write. So you could do something like that too. Any opportunities in the Christian market? I honestly have no idea off the top of my head, but if there are companies selling solutions to churches or Christian websites or something else that's a business solution, then probably. I don't know about certain niches off the top of my head because I haven't researched them, but give it a look. You could go on Google and type in white papers for the Christian market. Or go to Christian trade associations, Christian business trade associations, and see if anybody pops up as someone having white papers. That's the kind of legwork you can do in a certain niche. And Catherine's giving you some ideas. Church suppliers for candles, prayer cards. There you go.
Awesome.
Okay, I found an industry that does not appear to have white papers. How might I disrupt that void? Oh, that's a great question. Because if an industry is not using white papers, you're probably going to have a really hard time convincing a client to use them. They don't see the value, I'd move on. Work with an industry that does use them. And that's a great idea that you reminded me of. To find clients, you want to work in an industry that does use white papers. Okay, so when you Google white papers for and then put in the industry, if nothing shows up, I'd move on, because that's a world that doesn't. But I haven't come across a world yet that does not use white papers at all, unless it's a consumer e-commerce kind of thing where you're selling shoes or things like that. That just doesn't apply. Hope that helps.
What's the best platform for a white paper? G Suite, Office 365, security, shareability. So yeah, you can use Google Docs if you want. For all the white papers I've done, I've just used Word and emailed it back and forth. That will probably be a discussion with your client on what they would like to use and how they would like to communicate.
Okay, Michael, what are the most important aspects that make up a high-quality white paper? Well, really, a unique, trustworthy, legit, credible solution that a company can offer, and it's proven by case studies or by track record or by leading authorities who recommend it, then, you know, that's going to be powerful versus ho-hum, same old, same old. So I hope that helps. What types of copy or content do each suggest while I writing a white paper, since it takes 2 months waiting for the money to come in? Well, you can blog for a client, and you can write emails for a client. You can offer case studies. There's that big old continuum grid I showed you. There are lots of things you can be doing while working on the white paper, since yes, it does take time. So I hope.
Yeah. And with respect to the, sorry.
No, you go.
With respect to the case studies, they may give you like three clients to interview, and you may pick one of those clients to put the case study into the white paper. You may ask your client, can I write up the other two case studies for X amount of money, right? And then they've got case studies as well as a white paper with a case study in it.
Okay.
That could work too.
I'm just typing.
Okay. So then the last one. Oh, that's a thank you. Let's see.
Yay. I think you should all write a white paper about bacon. That's what Kelly's talking about. Yay. Yeah. Right. That's awesome. I want to see that white paper. I think we're done with questions. My goodness. Thank you very much. What an active participating audience. I so appreciate all the questions. Thank you, Lisa, so much for your input. As you can see, she's got the chops and has been doing this and is going to be a great teaching assistant with me in the class.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and please do check out the Perfect Gig link there and decide if that's for you. I have a feeling by all the energy put into the questions that some of you will be jumping in, and I hope to see you in the class. That would be amazing. And we're going to have some fun, and you'll have a great sample to go out there and get clients with if you join us. So I hope you do. That's it for today. And again, thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Jake and Valentina and Cozy and everybody in the back end. Sarah, I really appreciate your time helping us with these. And we love having you guys with us. And there'll be another topic next month. So we'll see you then. Take care.
Bye.